Welcome to the Knock on Archery podcast, where we bring all archers and bow hunters together from all walks of life with the goal to educate, empower, and inspire you to be better both in the field and on the range.
All right, everybody, this is going to be possibly a fun podcast, but possibly a lame one based on what you just heard when I didn't talk. We've got Caleb Copeland from Copeland Creative. We've got Joe Chicalibre.
Close enough.
From
we call him the Italian.
Yeah.
Oh, okay. From Redneck Tech / Copeland Creative. Yeah. He has two jobs. Mm-hmm. You only have one.
Oh, Caleb. Okay. Here we go.
And then we've got Casey, the man on a mission from, well, now you're in Iowa.
Yeah, I'm on
welcome,
in Iowa.
Welcome to the this best state ever for whitetails, for sure.
Yeah.
But you were formerly in Michigan?
Yep, formerly in Michigan. So, yeah, worked at G5 Prime. Still working there, just remote this time.
Lucky
you. So, moved to the Big Buck State. Still get to do what I love.
Yeah. It might be cool if Prime just relocated, but it's probably out of the cards for the whole move
machine. Okay. I've been trying to get, like, a company lease.
Oh,
and then I'll just manage it.
There you go.
And then they haven't bid on that, though.
Yeah.
Good. I got a couple pins I'll drop you after the podcast in Iowa. Good. Solid spot.
Yeah.
I got some real good ones, too. They're going to cost you.
Yeah.
Now I can back out. Yeah. And by the way, as soon as I, like, say what we're going to talk about, my point of being here will be non-relevant. So you guys are going to nerd out on whatever you talk about.
Whatever you talk about.
Yeah. Well, you guys talk gigabytes. I talk gigasquirts.
Yeah. Clip that one right there.
Yeah, I knew that was coming.
You guys talk gigabytes. I talk gigasquirts. I just want to see gigasquirts from your gigabytes.
We got plenty of gigasquirts.
This week, we've gotten some gigasquirts for sure. Squirtin' for Certain is the name of this podcast. No, that's a new one. That wasn't even the one.
Squirtin'
for Certain.
Yeah, we came out here testing broadheads with some good cameras and really focusing only on the high speed side of things. So, it's been kind of a crazy.
The operators behind the cameras were all right.
You guys,
I mean, not just the cameras.
No, truthfully, you guys have been baller status because, well, you've seen my stuff. You've seen my photography.
Oh, yeah.
Maybe not my photography, but definitely my videography is like very to the point of I'm hitting record. I'm going to get that thing in a general region where hopefully something walks in frame and I'm going to shoot it.
Yeah, we've had this conversation a couple of times. Yeah.
I know, but honestly, people really liked, what do we call that one buck? The one that I self-filmed this year? What was his name? I forgot what we called
him. Which one, the big brown tine one?
Yeah, with the gnarly tines.
I don't remember what we named him.
People really like reached out and loved that episode. Really? And it was, I mean, one, I was a little bit worried because, you know, I tried to not put shots on there that could raise eyebrows to the hunting community. But, I mean, it was definitely like a real life rut, spinal tap shot, you know, dropped him in a spot and stuff. And, I mean, as much as I wanted perfect double lung and they pile up in 3 seconds on camera, that just wasn't what happened. And, you know, and I just kind of just showed the truth, and it was pretty cool how many people were like, man, that's like what most of my hunts are like. One of my good buddies is like, I felt like I was watching my own hunt.
Yeah.
You know. So I thought it'd be a very cool podcast because you guys are all stellar at your craft, and I don't even know why, to be honest, but I started self-filming, I guess when I was like 18, I started doing it. Like my first ones were all on like a big VHS one. Like I found a couple VHS ones. But that's how I started. Just me and one of my best friends, we would go out and just film each other, mainly because we wanted to like come back and watch them, but there was nowhere to house them. It wasn't until I met Dave Watson at a shoot where I got invited to be on like TV. And then I told him, I've got a whole bunch of tapes And so I ended up like giving Dave, like anytime he was like hurting for footage, he'd be like, got any tapes? I'm like, oh yeah, I got tapes. Yeah. I had a pretty interesting one that I don't think I could find anymore, but I had one called the Blair Doe Project.
Oh God.
Mainly because it was like, it was that shaky.
It looked like a friggin' witch was chasing you.
But it was like a plethora of does throughout one like high eight tape.
I've sat with you since 18 now. I can't imagine sitting with you back in like your 18, 19, 20, 21 time frame.
Listen, there's reason those aren't out. Yeah, yeah. Everybody has a childhood where they definitely now tell all their kids never to do that.
Yeah.
Like, yeah.
That was yours?
Yeah, and luckily some of it I wasn't like, you know, well, one, I wasn't in the public, so, you know, I think it just is what it is. But, yeah, there's – when I see people do that, I definitely just kind of think, well, I was that age once, but I grew out of it. But, yeah.
Well, like when you started self-filming your hunts, was it just because you wanted to – experience them again, or was there an influence of something you saw, like VHS tapes you're watching, you just wanted to do that? Like, why did you do it, just to watch your hunts back?
Yeah, I loved, because honestly what is that? I don't know what that,
something with a cord.
Yeah, mm-hmm. One of the cords has got a little bug in it, but I just didn't like when I would go out and do a hunt and then you come back and you really try to explain everything that happened. And when you could go back, like we did today, and play it back.
Put it on the big screen.
Yeah, it was just like, it totally like changed hunting camp. And honestly, my very first hunting camp as a kid, that hunting camp had like, it was a old like rat infested trailer with, you know, whatever couch my Uncle Kenny was told to throw out, went down to camp. And then there was an old TV in there and like a bunch of Monster Buck VHS tapes from like 1 through 5 that literally had every bit of ink worn off them from how many times you like took it out of the case and slid it back in. So that's kind of when it, you know, when it started. Mm-hmm. And then when I turned pro in the end of 97, and that's when I met Dave Watson. I think I met Dave in 96, but he asked me to do a hunt with him in 97, and then that's what started it. You know?
Yeah, my obsession with watching hunts and stuff like that was Truth About Whitetails, Primo's Truth About Whitetails. I think it was number 5. And I've been in this industry for 12 years now, and me and my brother watched that VHS 1,000 times. And one of the people I've met, pretty much everybody I could ever want to meet, got to hunt with most of them. The one guy I've never met is Will Primos, that I've always wanted to meet. And he's the first guy. Like, I could tell you all the hunts. I could tell you the deer that he shot, where he was, you know, what state. And, like, that was my first, like, oh, no, that's cool. Like,
Remember when the Truth Elk videos came out.
Oh, dude.
I was like, what is this animal?
Yeah.
And I want it.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
I mean, because they did – that the Truth Elk videos were so ahead of their time, I feel like, because they were very awesome hunts with, like, I mean, I don't know, maybe if we went back now and I watched them, maybe they're like 280 bulls, but when I was a kid, I thought that thing, they were like shooting 400.
How many
left
of those
right.
bugle tubes did they sell from that?
How many hoochie mamas dude have ruined every bit of public land?
100%
because of
everybody
those
had that. Dude, my brother one time, elk hunt, dude, he was going to town on that. He was like, they're coming. I looked at him. I was like, dude.
No,
I was like, they're not coming. And I was like, put that away. And he'd hit it, they'd bugle, and I'm like, dude, you have to stop.
It was
that.
Just another dude down the canyon.
Yeah. Freaking Sam Soholtz over there on top of his bus just being like, there's some freaking dork out there, the hoochie mama. Let's just start bugling at him.
Yeah.
Totally true. I had what's funny is when I had my shoulder surgery and I got out of that sling right before, like, my doctor gave me the okay to shoot a regular bow like a week before I went to Alberta for the opener, the year of my surgery. And so I only was shooting like 55 or 60 pounds, you know, like normal way. And we were going after this bull, and usually, like, I'm calling, but we got into this creek bed, and it was, like, you could barely see, you know, it was just in this thick stuff. It was, like, head high, and we're all in there, and this bull is coming through this stuff, and he's worked, he's fired up, and I go, I think I said, I'm sure, I go, God, we need to, I'm like, I need to, if a caller could, if you could stay here and call, I can get to that bull and he's dead. I think Jeremy's like, get up there, I'll call. And I went and I didn't realize, but he had a hoochie mama in his back. And so I like get up there and I can see the bull in the creek coming down this creek and Dusty's like right over my shoulder. And then all of a sudden I hear like, meow. And I was like, oh no. And all of a sudden that thing's like, and came in, and I ended up shooting that thing at 10 yards, and it was one of the best bulls we've killed up there. And I was like, dude, bring that thing back. Yeah. Maybe they forgot about it, you know.
That they never heard it that deep in Alberta.
Well, everybody had that. So did any of you, like, film your own hunts before you got into the media?
I did, a lot.
Okay. Because the point of this podcast is I really wanted to do a podcast. I mean, you guys will probably go deep into the paint, I'm sure, but I really wanted to do a podcast on self-filming 101. Like, what can get people do to self-film 101? Like, what's some do's and don'ts? So you started self-filming?
Yeah, a long time ago.
When, like, how old were you, I think?
I was probably 20, maybe. I'm 32 now, so.
How junky was your first camera arm?
What did I have? No, it was actually pretty nice. I had the Muddy. What is it,
the Hunter or the Outfitter?
The lower grade
heavy
one.
The Hunter's the middle one. The Outfitter's the small one.
I had the Outfitter.
If you had the Muddy, you're like way ahead.
Oh, yeah.
I've got my first one, and I'll make sure I don't throw it away so you can see it. It's made out of half-inch aluminum tubing and, like, screws and stuff. It was ahead of its time, not.
Yeah.
Caleb. Did you ever self-film, or you've always?
I've tried to self-film like twice, and I was like, hell with this. I'm not doing this anymore. I always – so when I first got into it, you know –
Are you too much of a perfectionist? Is that weird? Like if it walks out of the frame, you're going to be like, oh, yeah. I'm Dudley right now.
Part of that, but more than anything, I think it was my influence of what I always watched. I grew up watching, you know, Monster Bucks. I grew up watching Primos, and they always had a camera guy. Mm. It was always how it was done. So for when I first got into this for – 2.5-3 years I just wanted to go with people and get experience, so I just filmed for them. Like, hey, you're hunting, you got a decent deer showing up, can I go with you? It was, and if not, I went with my brother. I didn't hunt for like 2.5 years just trying to learn, and that's
so
you
hunted with the lens from get-go.
Oh yeah, always. Yeah, I just awesome. And that's why I have such a hard time doing the cell phone thing, and I get asked about it all the time. I'm like, I'm not the guy to ask. Like, I know some simple principles to make your job easier and your product look better. But I'm not your guy, because to me, killing one with a bow is hard enough. And then adding a camera to it, like, your odds are so against you now. To get, you know, because what happens more 9 times out of 10 with most people, you know, not you, but others, is like, the camera goes by the wayside. I'm killing this deer. Yeah. And that's usually what happens. Yeah. It's like, I brought this camera and I've spent all this time and this effort, but it's either getting the kill on camera or getting some good deer footage or killing this deer, I'm killing the deer.
Yeah.
And that's what most people do. And that my commitment in the beginning was like, I want to get it on camera, so therefore I have to run camera and not hunt. And that was fine with me. I never cared about killing I like shooting a deer as much as anybody.
Because there's a lot of times where I'm like, dude.
You've told me that on hunts
I'm
before.
Like, if you wreck this, you're going to be in big trouble. Like, I don't care if it's on camera.
No.
We're killing.
I was wondering about that scar.
Dude, no. So we were in Colorado. I'll tell the story on duds here real quick. So we were in Colorado. 19 is the year that you post the video of me struggling up the hill every time. It was that hunt. And we've been freaking.
He was so proud of that this year.
You posted that, and I immediately called Joe. I'm like, he planned that? He's like, dude, he's been planning that since
I have a reminder set.
Oh, my God.
On September 29th, it says, like, Caleb video.
Yeah.
Like, last day of September video.
Yeah. And it was, dude. So we had been killing ourselves up this steep face, and you know, chasing that long-legged idiot around.
It was an SOB,
dude. It was, and we had been we had been chasing this one particular bull, and we had put in like 4 or 5 days on him, and like we're both dragging. And this is after we had already hunted two other places before this.
This is like day 21.
Yeah, we're at the end of the season, and like we're, you know, he's gassed, I'm gassed, and this, you know, we get to this, we finally catch up to this stupid bull that we've been chasing. And Dud looks back at me. He's like, I'm just going to go kill him. You stay here. And I'm like, no, I'm going. And he just takes off. And I'm like, I'm going with you. And I went up there and I got, and he didn't know I went with him. He shoots the bull and turns and looks at him. He's like, did you get it? I'm like, I absolutely got it. I was like,
you better got that.
I'm like, I am not staying back. I have stepped every step for this stupid bull. I'm not leaving now. And like that was the whole thing. He was killing the bull. He didn't care if he got the footage or not. I cared about the footage, you know. So, and that's to me that's what self filming bulls down to is like.
Yeah.
The camera be danged, man. I'm gonna get this shot, and that's the frustrating thing with me. Like I'm there for the best footage possible.
Yesterday, Brian was like, hey, he's like, did you get Dud like stalking and stuff? And I was like, bro, let me explain to you how this works. I was like, you do not run the camera if it's going to blow the stalk. I was like, you get what you get and you get the kill and then we'll figure the rest out later. But I was like, to stop and like be like, hey, dude, let me. I'm like, it's not going to happen. No.
You're going to get the look of death.
No,
like you're going to get a look of
when
death.
When Dud says right here, you are right here.
Yeah. You're not like touching my heel. I'm getting really paranoid. Oh, I mean, it's such an important thing though, because with spot and stalk, anytime an animal sees two-legged objects, they know what you are.
Yeah.
Even with good camo, if nothing else, they're going to look at you long enough to where, you know, you might only have a small window of time to cover the ground you need. Mm-hmm. But when you're together, and if they do see you, for me, four legs and a single body just lets stuff put their guard down so much faster than as soon as there's a split between two objects.
Makes sense.
It's a and two heads.
Mm-hmm.
It really changes the game. So yeah, I'm over the perfect. Like I would not be accepted for Primo's videos. I can tell you that right now. Like there's.
But with that being said, we have laid down some really epic stuff together too. Like some of it has been like get what you can get, and others have been like, oh, this is about to be sexy.
Well, that's credit to you guys, and it's honestly why I struggle with other people because you know it's a tough dynamic to kill something on camera like. Especially the way we do it, you know, I feel like I don't want people to think that, you know, we're struggling and going to junky spots all the time, you know, but I also go a lot of places by myself.
Yeah.
You know, we go to a lot of places where it's a very small camp. It's like close friends. Some of them, like, honestly, a lot of my friends are like, I don't want to be on camera.
Mm-hmm.
And so it's just really small situations. So we don't have a lot of opportunities, and honestly, our success comes down to two things. One, some like reaction time is just, and I think that just comes, the people that I know that are killers, they've done it so many times that they react in like really fast moments, and some people like would have already been like, they would have had their bow to the side and then brought it into range and then they catch that movement, or they wouldn't have been like ranging as they're walking. Like a lot of times if I'm going, I'm like, when we get there, I've got 2 seconds to like make this happen.
Yeah.
So I'm like walking, ranging the tree. I'm going to stop at ranging the thing. And then by the time I'm rolling the dial. And as soon as I get to the tree, we're going, and I'm like, we're going right away. Like we're not milking any of this. So, you know, I think some of that just comes down to, you know, we've done an amazing job percentage wise, like as a team, honestly, because we've pulled off some freaking miracles on a lot of hunts. And then, you know, truthfully, I feel like the equipment I pick makes a difference, because I know a lot of people that are good hunters, like really good hunters, super educated, that do trips with me, and you know, there's just always people in camp that didn't fill the tag, you know, and a lot of it comes down to like real quick reactions, like instinct stuff, where guides are like, actually, you know, your buddy could have freaking, if he would have had his sight set and he wasn't having to set his sight and then draw back another time, like if he would have known just to hold 4 inches high and not had to let down and turn his sight 2 more yards, you know what I mean? Those little things are the difference between filling tags and not. But then when it comes to like the equipment, I've just really always kept it simple because, you know, I've had people with electronic sight and the like the battery runs out and their pins, you know, they don't like I've
screen
had that. I've
ha-
yeah, I've had people that were like, well, I didn't want to pay an extra $100 for that rest. And I'm like, yeah, but the one you pick's plastic and this one's like freaking machined aluminum. And the next thing you know, that thing's like they take it out of their case. It's all bent, jacked up, and you don't even know that it is until they miss. And they're like, I was way off. I don't know what happened. Then I look at their bow, and I'm like, dude, your whisker biscuit's all twisted. So, yeah, and I mean, even on the topic of broadheads, you know, I've like had times where I've tried a different broadhead, and I mean, we did this year.
Yeah.
We tried a broadhead.
Oh, that's right.
And, yeah. Lost an animal, you know, on a broadhead that everybody told me I should shoot. You know, it wasn't this one.
No, I know it wasn't.
But yeah, I mean, that's what I give the credit to. And you guys are amazing too. Like, there's not a lot of media people that you've captured stuff where I've been like, dude, impressive. Mm-hmm. Like, because it's not, you know, I'm not. Like, when you talk to me about, like, when Lee and Tiff have their hunts, I mean, and I've been on hunts where Lee and Tiff are there, and when I see, like, three dudes rolling out with tripods and, like, and a guide, and I'm like...
It's cost a lot of animals.
Oh, my gosh.
A lot of animals.
Oh, my gosh. Yeah. I would probably shoot myself if I had to deal with
it. It's a lot, man.
Like,
that's
even hearing you walk again 2 days ago, I was like...
Come on, man. Here we go. I didn't know if I was going to make it with Dud. That's what I was going to say. That was the another thing I was going to do. I was like, my first couple hunts with him, I didn't know if I was going to make it because I got a couple of those, like, the looks and looks at my feet and just looks at me, doesn't say anything, like the disappointed father. Yeah. Got those several times. Yeah. And he's like, dude, like, come on, man.
I feel like
I'm like, dude, I'm walking as quiet as you. He's like, no, you're not.
Yeah, right.
I feel like his legs have some of those hydraulic PTO fence post drivers in them. Because, like, when I'm like, put your foot down quiet, he's like, all right.
So JP nicknamed me Captain Crunch. That's what JP nicknamed me.
Well, okay.
Yeah. Oh yeah.
So I feel like you step like with authority though.
Dude,
like when you like do something
freaking
dude,
solid, man.
It's like deliberate.
Hell yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah, you're not moving.
Diesel
immovable.
Engine.
Hell yeah.
Diesel engine.
Yeah,
maybe he's got like weak
gear.
Ass ankles.
Yeah, I do have weak ankles. I've torn ligaments in my right ankle twice.
I stalk on the side of my feet. Like, I would literally put my heel down, I roll down the side, I get to the ball of my foot, and then I put my foot down.
First time you've ever told me that.
Let's see it, tiny dancer.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Prove it tonight.
Maybe we should let Caleb stalk tonight and just be like, dude, side of your foot's only.
Dude, your thing is your legs are, like, so abnormally long. That, like, yeah. Dud's like, you got to step in my steps.
Dude,
I'm like, bro, my legs don't go that far.
Oh, yeah. Oh, I get that question all the time. How's it like hunting with Dud? I'm like any other, unlike any other person you've ever hunted with.
Yeah.
I'm like, wow. I'm like, well, he's
a
like,
giraffe.
Like no, it's not that. It's like, he's sitting there, you're telling jokes and making, you know, having a ball. And then it's like, a twig breaks. He's like, everybody down. Everybody stop. Yeah. It's like he just flips a switch and he's like mean all of a sudden.
Yeah.
It's like, and then like the, you know, something happens. He's like, all right, we're having a party again.
Yeah.
It's like, dude, he's got a switch, man. And he's like first to fifth gear. Like there's no second, there's no third, there's no fourth.
Well,
first, fifth.
I officially apologize.
It's
I'm
all
sorry.
Officially
no.
On the record, on camera.
No, we've had some.
I'm sorry, Caleb. For every time I've been mean to you.
You've not been mean. But like you, the way you say things is like,
it doesn't sound
all
nice.
Right, that's a little hurtful, but okay.
It's
I still
not,
love you.
It's not intentional though.
No.
You just get into a mode.
I don't know. Sharon's and told
it's
stories.
Just like,
she's, he's
oh,
done
yeah.
it to Sharon.
Oh,
and Sharon's like, he's my husband and he's
yeah.
mean to me.
Yeah, there's been a few times where I've like, you know, forgot it was poor Sharon back there and like. But honestly,
no. You just go into this other place. Like I never got upset about it. I'm like,
called,
he's just in that zone.
It's
and
game
it's like,
mode, bro.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's game mode.
Yeah, but I've never seen anybody that can go in and out of game mode so quickly.
Well, Sylvester Stallone, dude, with his hat over the top. You just turn it around.
And you just get in there.
It's like a spark plug, remember?
Dude, that. I haven't seen that movie in a long time. That was one of my dad's favorites. Going down the road, just pulling that thing out.
Was he?
Yeah.
Oh, my gosh. Yeah. All right, Casey, where did you start with media?
Mine's a lot different than your guys'. So mine, I actually started my job here at G5 and Prime first as a graphic designer. So I was working on the graphic side and getting media from our guys and working with it that way. And then I was just like, there was a lot of stuff that I was just a little frustrated with. And I was like, it just needs to be done this way. I need a title over here. So I need it to be shot this way. And that's kind of how I got into it, is I was just like, I wasn't getting the right stuff. Mm. And I was like, I just need to do it myself.
Oh,
yeah. So it's a lot different. So that's just photos and video. And then obviously I've always been a hunter, but I've never filmed my hunts and stuff like that growing up. So working for this company, I've filmed a lot of hunts and learned to love that. So the passion grew from there. But initially it did start as just like, I need stuff done this way for this project, and I'm not getting the shots that I need necessarily. So
how, what was the like the learning curve like? Because
a lot of YouTube.
Yeah, I was going to say. And listen, for any of you listening to this, and you're like a perfect example for this, because you're in a position, honestly, that I was, because I didn't have anyone that did media. So I had to like learn to film, you know, my buddy filmed me, then I learned to film myself. So then it's like trying to figure out, you know, ordering the wrong freaking microphone, not realizing there's like two different types of jacks, you know, for a camera, or, you know, just stuff like that. You know, I'd save up and buy this awesome Sennheiser mic that's an XLR, and then like I save up again and buy my Canon G30 and like realize it doesn't plug into that thing, you know, and I'm just like, oh, damn it. But the cool thing about when you do that is I feel like you actually become so good at what you do because you have to struggle through it. So, I mean, that's probably like your photography is awesome. I haven't seen your video. Well, no, I did see your video. Also awesome.
Thank you.
The backflip pink mist explosion was amazing. The only thing that could have made that better, I mean, now that Nate's not here, is if his antlers would have both popped off.
That would have been.
Because when he's like, the big deer always get me. Yeah. Like, could you imagine if that thing did that big backflip?
And then turned into an antlerless tag right away.
You'd be like, no. So what was some of the toughest learning curves when it came to, like, I mean, talk some about, like, camera, where the camera stuff, and then like on the editing side.
I mean, there wasn't a huge curve for me because I had a huge background in the graphic design, so it was like I was really familiar with all the Adobe suite.
Yeah.
So like a lot of that transfers to the Premiere side, so I already knew how a lot of stuff worked. But honestly, it was just repetition and like not being afraid to try new things and just like looking up random stuff and just like, I want to transition. I know what I want. I want this to come down like this. And then just like finding on YouTube, learning how to do it. And then that way. But it was more just like, I could go the safer out and just throw a title here, or I can make kind of what's in my brain.
Yeah.
And I think just having a creative brain pushes you a little bit more than just like knowing equipment and stuff.
Yeah.
Because I've seen people shoot. I mean, we were just talking about how media is kind of just going towards, you don't necessarily need all this crazy equipment sometimes.
Yeah, I'm dragging you three studs in here to tell all of us nerds how to just get some high quality Instagram stuff.
Yeah.
But like, you guys are like, we went to school,
Yeah, but I love the high quality stuff, but like, you don't need it necessarily to create good stuff. You just need a creative mind. And then making that creative, all your creative ideas come to life, takes a little bit more work on how to do stuff. But there's so much media out there on, I mean, the self-filming stuff, that takes just practice and doing it. But as far as like the actual editing stuff, I think, I mean, there's a tutorial for everything out there. There's people that know.
There's so much information.
Yeah.
Like, I learned everything off YouTube. Like, I got shoulder surgery and like had nothing to do. So I bought an A7 III and just watched like YouTube videos for
Peter
like 6
McKinnon,
months.
Man, that's how.
Yeah, I mean, there's so much information.
He's like the video I'm sure you guys have watched a bunch
of Peter McKinnon. I saw your backpack.
Like, well, give him a shout out. Like, that's what we're here for.
He's got like eight million subs.
Huh? Like, he's got like 8 million
yeah,
subs.
He's got.
Well, now you're on Knock On, dude.
Now you're really going
to
blow up.
Welcome to the freaking ball game.
Welcome to the show.
We're going
to
make him who he is.
Yeah, 100%. Take credit for all this.
He's kind of like, I mean, like the you of the camera. Like, he's got just a video on literally everything.
I watched a lot of Peter McKinnon.
Yeah, so it's just like how to just do simple, I mean, even workflow stuff. Like how to make your stuff edit a little quicker. And, yeah, he's, I mean, that's where I learned 90% of my stuff. The other, actually, I shouldn't say 90. Most of it was just trial and error. But
yeah, that's awesome.
I could hardly turn a computer on before starting this. Like, it was bad. What? And I'm still like, yeah, dude. People are like, dude, can you put that file in that folder? And I was like, no, I can't.
That's pretty awesome. So how long have you been, like, you know, really doing it?
Like, I did it, like, on the side for probably a year and a half. And then, like, truthfully, and I don't even know if you know this, the first, like, actual hunt I filmed for money was Lee and Tiff.
Really?
I'd
go right
never,
through the middle right there.
I know that.
You know we're in Texas when just a random cowboy comes through with a rifle and a bag, and a Walmart bag.
I love it. The first one you ever did was
the
for
the first
Lincoln.
One, dude. I never even told you.
Wait, what?
Yeah.
I missed that because I saw a barrel come down. Yes.
The first hunt I ever filmed for money was Lee and Tip.
Oh, really?
For me, yeah.
Ever.
That's great.
Like, I had filmed some fishing stuff. And I was doing that, like, paid on the side, like, working my other job. But, like, as far as hunting, never did it.
Yeah.
And like, that was freelance for me?
Yeah.
Yeah, that was freelance for me. Okay. So that was the first year we did it or the second year we did it?
Well, that was last year. So
last,
that
second
is,
year. Huh.
So when did you, like, start your self-tutorial stuff, like your shoulder surgery time?
Be honest. You really learned at the class. You really learned everything you need to know at the class.
Did you go to Copeland class?
I did, yeah. That's how we met.
Yeah. But I've met, I mean, James was pretty talented, too. Mm-hmm. I mean, he came from your class, you know, when we hired James.
I think we've had
I always hire through you. If I needed someone, I'm like, Caleb, just find me. No. I mean, if you want to – when Copeland says if you go to these classes, they literally recruit for companies. When there's times where I know I have big media years coming up, you know, we definitely hire through you.
Yeah.
I'm not going to ever hire a media person unless I vet them through you. Antoine would be my vets.
12 or 13 people over the years that are full-time in the industry doing something now.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So do you start them out on G30s when they come to the class? Or
no, we're trying to get them in this decade.
Oh.
Yeah.
I know. The reason is my batteries. My camera on that last buck, it powered down, like, but it was minus 30-something.
Yeah, that's probably
why. It made some sounds that I didn't know a non-tape recording camera could make. And then I just kind of looked over, and it just gave me this, like, gray screen of death. And I actually just petted it. And then I just looked at my buck, and I'm like, dude, I don't care if this is on camera. You're dying.
Dude, but sorry. To say you got the goodie out of that camera would be an understatement.
Oh, dude.
How many things does that thing get seen to get shot?
So many.
Yeah.
And that's what you use, like, on the Sportsman's Channel, too?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I use my G30 since before the very first season of Knock On.
Really?
Which was 2010. So
because the DVDs were all high 8. They were all the that Canon GL1 or whatever. Is that what it was? XL1?
Yeah. There was XL1, a XLH1. There was a GL1. There's a G8, GL5. There's a bunch of them. Was that the 4x3 cameras? That's before HD?
Yeah, I personally like anything I can put in my fanny pack.
Yeah, I know. Oh, I remember the first time I showed up with one of our big camera. I showed up with my FS7, the one that's bigger than that, on the hunt with Doug before, and he goes, "You got anything any smaller?"
Get your iPhone out. Let's go.
I'm surprised you're not a GoPro hunter then, just like one of those guys who are in the chest.
I'm not going to let him. Why. I won't let him. Not going to let him do it.
I probably own a dozen GoPros, and I've never used them more than the first time when I charged them and used them in my kitchen.
Yeah.
And then I was like, well, I might have taken one. The first ones, like, the batteries ran out.
Dude, the first ones were junk.
And and the other thing, too, is, you know, my brain is thinking about way too much at one time. So stuff gets left on, left open, left out a lot. Like the amount of times I've gone hunting this past year with that buck, I was pulling every stop I had out. And dude, the amount of like stands I got in that I haven't been in a long time where I'm like, I was looking for that Ozonix. Like, I mean, just there's my tree arm base. Like, you know, just get in a blind and I'm like, oh, that's where that was. And my freaking phone was in here the whole year. Like, I mean, that's pretty common. Yeah. That's pretty common. So did you start with, when you started filming, did you start with higher end stuff just because you were on the graphics side and that was your schooling?
No. So I started on a Nikon D750. So not a video side. Like it was good photos that would come out of it, but not a video camera at all.
You had a 750?
Yeah.
I had a D710, I think, yeah. That I really liked.
Yeah.
Yeah. You and Sharon were always Nikon shooters.
Sharon loved the D90s and I love that 710. Yeah.
They were good. I mean, they just struggled at video for a while, which is why I ended up switching to Canon. But, I mean, the photos were great. But, yeah, I started on there, and it shot, I mean, I think it shot 1080, and that was the highest it went. And just started kind of doing that stuff and messing around with it. But, yeah, it wasn't anything high quality. I mean, I wouldn't say I was like most freelance guys where you kind of just start up and build up your camera. I had the company to kind of help me out and, hey, we need to start doing a lot more in-house stuff.
Hey, we need and this freaking like, 400 to 600 lens.
Yes.
Trust me.
Yeah. So I've had a good backing to kind of get some good equipment. But we just tried to bring a lot more in-house as soon as I started taking it on as more of, I mean, seriously, like liking a lot of this stuff. And they gave me creative freedom when it came to just like, hey, I have an idea for a video. Let's just make it happen and let's... So my boss would just let me do my own thing for a week and trust that I was going to make something kind of cool. And sometimes they were cool, sometimes they were duds. But
yeah, that's the way you learn, man. You make crappy videos and be like, why does this suck so bad?
Yeah.
If you 100%. Go out, if Casey, if you went out to film yourself,
yep.
and you weren't in production, what would you take? Like, what would be your essentials?
To film or just to go hunting?
To film.
I mean, I'd probably take a 24 to 105 on a whatever base I could get. Mm-hmm. It didn't really matter too much. And then I'd honestly, for a second angle, I'd just put a GoPro just because they do so well.
Mm-hmm.
And worst case, I feel like GoPros are very underutilized just because they're not the highest quality and as far as like depth of field and aperture and stuff, but... You don't, when there's the serious hunters that don't want to miss a shot, and sometimes when you're self-filming and you're trying to adjust something, like the GoPro is going to get the shot. Mm-hmm. It's so wide, you're going to get some sort of shot. So when you're trying to make stuff for YouTube and you make this awesome video and then you're trying to self-film it and then you don't get the shot on camera at the end and you're all disappointed... If you have a GoPro, it's like a great backing where it's just like, if at they least work I like got it.
It's the Band-Aid.
They're supposed to.
Yeah, it's the Band-Aid, but it's just... Yeah.
Or if you just have some horrible transitions.
Yeah.
It's always the...
Yeah.
We call that the safety angle, so you can always cut back and forth the angle. But we run the Osmo Actions
because
I've never had good luck with GoPros. And anybody who ever has listened to our podcast, we crap on GoPros every chance we get because we hate them.
I do use GoPros.
You're still new to this whole thing. Yeah. So it's one of those things to where we had them for years and they just never charged. They wouldn't hold a charge. They corrupt cards. You charge and put them in your bag the next morning and they're dead. It's like, oh, I hated them. So we switched to the Osmo Actions probably 4 years ago and they're freaking bulletproof. And that's what we went to for our safety second angle.
Yeah.
But then we'll still shoot recreates and stuff in the blind too. But
yeah.
GoPro,
so that's kind of,
Osmo, same thing.
Yeah.
Self-filming, so, what's your setup, Joe?
Yeah, so I still do quite a bit for, like, my own personal YouTube channel. So, like,
That big buck you shot this year?
Yeah, that giant. Oh,
which one?
Yeah. Wait, was that this year or last year?
This is where we're going with this.
When you're out self-filming B-roll.
Got the B-roll master over here.
What do you use? What's like? What do you take out with you and your self image and your B roll?
So, in Joe's defense, which, half of his photos, he's got all of his kids with him, so yeah. That's probably why he hasn't shot anything.
Yeah, I know. And to be fair, I've shot some bucks on cell film and a pile of does, and they're for the video, for the world to see. They're on YouTube.
Okay.
Just to get that out of the way. But I've bounced back and forth to run like. My main camera the last couple of years has been a mirrorless. So it was A7 III, now it's A7 IV. Prior to that, I was using a G50, Canon G50. But then as far as like base and arm, I've got the fourth arrow set up. They have like a pretty lightweight base that I can actually run on my big camera arm, like when I'm filming clients or whatever. But then the arm that I run a lot is a Lone Wolf Custom Gear arm. And the reason that
the
I like
the new Lone Wolf or the old Lone Wolf?
Well, I guess it's like the older one now, or the newer one now. Like Andre DeQuisto.
Okay.
Yeah. It's like his revamp of his company.
Okay.
They've got an arm that's nice because like it doesn't have a base. So my thing with like self-filming is like if it's a constant pain, like you're not going to want to do it. So this base, this arm is like no base, and you strap it on and you use a screw that you screw into the tree, and then it tightens that strap.
Yeah.
And it's super light. It's bouncy. Like, you're not going to get, like, awesome footage, but, I mean, for what you're trying to do.
Yeah, but that's what I'm saying. That's kind of why I wanted to do this podcast, because there's stuff that you would never do for a client.
Yeah.
But it's like, but, you know, if it's the listener wanting to go out and film themselves, like, what are those things? Actually, I think one of my, probably my second tree arm was that. Lone Wolf had a tree arm a long time ago.
And it's like the new one, I think, is just like that old one.
Okay.
Because I think Andre DeQuisto designed
And honestly,
both.
The reason I was a G30, like the reason I love that, I thought it was like the GL1 or whatever, the old smaller white Canon.
Mm-hmm.
The reason I like that one, and then once I went to the G30, I was able to go to the smaller weight camera arms where I wasn't having to carry the outfitter or a bigger tripod.
Mm-hmm.
Like I can run off mid-weight at the most stuff with that G30, and it's like it's good. But and I can also fit a base in my backpack and the stuff I need to hunt, and the arm and the camera and an extra battery and a mic. I can put all that in one backpack when my camera is small enough. But, you know, that's why I never got into the big ones, because as soon as you do, you know, it's kind of like, well, I want big tires on my truck. Well, you got to lift it.
Yeah.
Right. You know, okay, now you look dumb with stock rims. So here you go. Got to buy some wheels too, right. You know. Oh, and your bumper looks kind of nerdy now. So, you know, that's kind of when I started to try to go to the bigger cameras. That's what happened for me.
Yeah, because like
that happens a lot.
Yeah, now like everyone is hanging and hunting. Like that's like the new craze.
Or you know, saddle and hunt.
Yeah,
saddle hunting.
And like, dude, you throw like your sticks, your stand, and all your camera gear. You're looking at like a 35-pound pack.
I worry about that from a safety point of view. Like at the end of the year, dude. My pack, because I'm, you know, it was like whatever it was, 70 something days that I hunted, and there was. You know, more than half that were like full days where I'm like having to take some food. And, you know, mainly for me, it's mainly like I need a full thermos of like coffee. And then I need like two water bottles. Then I need like a smaller Yeti thermos of like hot soup. Mm-hmm. And then I'm good to go for the whole day.
Yeah.
But there's definitely times where I've been climbing and I'm like, I don't even think this safety line would be able to hold me right now because my backpacks feel like I have a freaking elk on my back. You know.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Like mine does right now.
Yours is heavy, dude. What do you have in there?
A lens and like
Oh, you have tools? The 600 in there.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's how we got our money shot.
Mm-hmm. That's right. Yeah. They are money too.
So what's the if you had well, I'm gonna ask you a question. You gotta just spit it out quick. So I'm gonna ask a question, I'll point at you.
Oh Lord God.
One of these games. All right. Sounds like a trick question. Huh? All right, let's go.
Sony, Canon, Nikon.
Sony.
Well, it depends. It depends on what you're doing.
Well, you got I'm time to talk,
I'm a Canon,
sucker.
I'm a Canon guy for photos and stills. I'm a Sony guy for my big camera.
Yeah. I actually really like I like your work, your still work with the Canon. Like, it's definitely my favorite. Sorry, Joe.
Oh, that's cool. I get it, man.
What do you got?
Canon.
Canon?
Yep.
Both sides?
Yep.
Both sides of the house?
Yep. R5.
I love the, like, I'm not a media, you know, person by any means, but I love the coloration of the Canon. To me is more like what my eyes see. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And as many times as I've tried the Sonys, because, I mean, I've, like, bought every one, and then I have them, like, a week, and I'm just like, no. I just love the, like, if you're not a Lightroom person, like, when you look at an image without having to do anything to it, the Canon sees the way my eyes remember that that setting.
The
Does Canons that make sense?
The Canons are generally better at, like, contrast and, like, deeper blacks and, like the more colors saturated. Will pop a little more. And a little more saturation than the Sonys are.
Yeah.
Straight out of the camera for sure.
Yeah,
their color spaces.
They call them Canon color. Like,
yeah.
It's just...
The Canon colors, they pop to me more too.
Yeah.
That's why. But generally for me, what I tell people on the camera side, and then when they ask me that same question, it's like, you usually stick with what you started with. You get used to the ergonomics. Like, I like how a Canon fits my hand. Sonys were a little small for me, and they felt a little, you know, I have decently sized hands. Like, Canons, like, felt good in my hand. The buttons were where I wanted them to be, and that's what I got used to shooting. And now for stills, like, you hand me a Sony, I fumble. I can still do it, but you can hand me a Canon,
lot of
I know my way around it.
To do with, like, just it's hard to switch brands because you have so much equity in a brand.
Just
lenses and all of that stuff.
Oh,
it's
like
when I had to switch from Nikon to Canon, like, I lost a good amount of money. Luckily, I had the company helping me out, but I was like, if I were to do this just off the whim by myself, I mean, you're losing.
Well, that's the problem for me. I have
stuff.
To carry all the Canon lenses for my
and
mirrorless so. And all the Sony glass. You know, it's nice for, like, Joe and Clay, because both of them run all Sony. So they just...
Like adults.
They just carry the Sony glass, and then me and Ryer are both the nerds that want Canon glass and...
Yeah.
But they will also carry the Metabones, so we can run Canon glass on those if we wanted
to. Yeah, but then you lose autofocus.
Yeah,
in that, right?
But which I don't...
Which
run
we're not
auto,
doing
at
all.
You know,
yeah,
rarely run autofocus, but...
Except for yesterday.
We did do a little autofocus yesterday.
Yeah.
But... They all have their different capabilities.
Things are happening fast. Just go auto, boys. Hope for the best.
Yeah,
let's
but,
keep moving on. Sorry.
Yeah,
that was a critical mistake for me. If I have any regrets when it comes to media, my regret is, like, Sharon actually went to college when she moved over from England. She went to photography college.
I know that.
Yeah, she went to La Crosse for photography.
Nice.
And she, you know, I got her. She had, like, a D90. She went to the class, like, with her camera, and they, you know, the instructor was good enough to where he took you through the program with the camera that you had. And so Sharon was so proficient at the D90, and, you know, and I learned a lot from her, but we both had D90s. But then when we started filming on DSLRs, the D90 was a little bit, you know, it was at the very front edge of being able to record to it.
Mm-hmm.
So we ended up going to the 710s, which she automatically, like, the set, like, there it was, the body was different. So, like, the configuration was different. And so she kind of, like, she's like, I just don't know what I'm doing with this thing, you know? And honestly, I was doing it enough to where I'm like, here's where the new ones are. And I actually, like, had one for her that was preset to her presets. And then I carried another one with me. But then I kept going. When the Sony mirrorless came out, the very first ones, the white ones, remember the very first ones? Like, everybody raved about them because that was, like, the creation of the mirrorless. And so I'm like, we have to do this. And truthfully, I don't think we really did that fast. And I changed, like, I was trying to change technology so fast to keep up with, I was trying to keep up with people in the industry that were having high quality people actually create their content. What I should have done was stuck to what I could function fast and not having to relearn. Because, and then once we got, like, three models out, Sharon's like, I freaking hate this thing. I want my D90 back. So I went back and like found an unused D90 after they were discontinued for like a couple years. Got her D90 back, and then she's just like, I've totally forgot what this thing's like. Mm-hmm. And then I'm like, well, I have to go freaking A7s. Mm-hmm. Like, that's where everyone's going. I got to go there. So I went to the A7, and then just – it got to the point where that's when I backed out of, like, photography and stuff, because I, like – I tried to upgrade too fast to where I lost the ability to function, and you can only read one – like camera manual front to back, I think.
Yeah.
And I did it like 10 years prior to all that. So, and that's why I've stuck with the Canon, because that's been a regret for mine on the photography side. I feel like I should just go back to like some of the original body Nikons, just because I feel like it would come back to me. But I've also thought about doing a full changeover to all Canons because I like the color.
Yeah.
Nikon had awesome color too.
Mm-hmm.
But I think just to my eye, the Canon was pretty awesome.
The purest photographer people I know generally shoot Nikons. They're really like pure photo guys. They don't shoot video. They are a lot of times they're Nikon guys. Mm-hmm. Or Canon. Most of the time, but most of the time, like one of my most incredible photographer guy I know he's a Nikon guy. Mm-hmm. And that's what he's always shot. But he's a strictly photo. If you want video, he's like, not your guy.
Yeah, but they might buy, like, if they have a certain body, if another body comes out where it's got like a better battery life or something, like a lot of those guys, they're changing bodies, they're not changing models.
Mm-hmm.
They're changing, like, if there's a new generation, you know, if there's, you know, whatever, an A7
3, an A7
and then A7. And then a 4 comes out and the battery life is 3x the ones, mm-hmm. like, that person can change over. Mm-hmm. Well,
just like the bodies, like, upgrading that, like, the lenses keep value for a long time. And obviously, like, so you can keep those. So that's why people kind of upgrade bodies, because technology gets a little better here and there. Lenses keep their value though.
And I learned pretty quick, like all my first lenses for years were Tamron's.
Mm-hmm. I run some Tamron's.
I saw you with that and I'm like, dang, bro.
Dude, they're pretty good.
Yeah. I mean, maybe they keep up, but like at the time they were just so much cheaper. Yeah. Like that's what I had to learn. Yeah, I'm sure. I had to buy it.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I had to buy it. But then once I actually got some real Nikon lenses, then it's just like, ooh, these actually do make the picture better. Like when you start getting into bigger bells and you start getting into some of the lower f-stops, like, you know, for the purpose, the lens definitely creates a whole new eye for you.
Yep. And I'm sure you get, like, now that a lot of the video stuff, like, you can shoot 4K, 8K, and when you start punching into stuff, like, the lenses start to make a difference.
On sharpness and everything
else. Yeah, on sharpness.
No doubt.
So, like, there's value in that, too.
So, if you've got a dodgy lens, but you're shooting on a 8K where you're going to be punching in, you're kind of, you might as well have had a decent lens on 4K or 1080.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Okay, so I'm going to ask you guys another question. What is, like, the biggest mistake you see people making when they're, like, self-filming? Like, when you either see someone post something or if you've been with people that do it, is there anything that stands out where you're like, man, they could make it easier on themselves if they did this? Or, you know, is there anything that stands out?
Well, I don't know. Probably
self-filming 101 mistakes.
Probably, like, if you're trying to – like, it depends what you're trying to do with it. But, like, at the end of the day, like, a mirrorless camera is not – like a great thing to self film with.
Yeah.
You know, like, and like now they're all the rave, which for good reason, like they're pretty, they work, you know, they work good, but like as far as self filming, like they're not very functional.
Yeah.
Unless you have an articulating screen, which they're starting to make them all with that now, but because you really need, like, to self film well, like you need some kind of zoom control.
Yeah.
Like on your
you
handle.
Need a thumb remote.
Yeah.
And you need a screen that can face your eye.
Yeah. Right.
G30, and then, dog.
Right.
Bring it back.
Yeah, it's true.
Some lithium batteries.
Yeah.
Dude, their stock is going shit right now.
Yeah. Because that's, like, probably my thing. Like, at the end of the day, like, learn, like, because you don't have to run, like, a G30 in auto.
Yeah.
Like, you can run it in manual and get way better results. But
you
then,
can,
like,
run parts of it manual. It won't let you run everything in manual at the same time.
I wish I had 4K, though.
Yeah.
I think some of the Sony like camcorders you can.
Oh, really?
Yeah, you can change.
Well, that's the biggest thing with the difference between a camcorder and like a mirrorless camera is you can't have. Generally, and this might be wrong now because I haven't looked at them, because that's the biggest question we always get is, what camera should I buy? And then the first question I always ask is, well, what's your budget? And then, yeah. $1,500. Like, well, there's not a whole lot of options for $1,500.
Yeah.
But, you know, if you buy a handy cam, generally they're set up to be ran on auto. Like, yeah. You know, your exposure's on auto, your focus is auto, and the camera's dictating everything you see. Yeah. And that's generally why it doesn't look the best. That's why, you know, somebody looks at something we shot and something they shot. It's like, why does yours look better? It's like, well, because every input in that camera, yeah. We made that decision of what the light's going to look like, where the focus is, what's our depth of field, you know, how, you know, where are we at in our focal range, all that stuff. And that might be way over your head. It was at one point for me too. But, you know, when you don't get to dictate what the camera wants in focus or what the exposure is, you kind of just get what you get.
Yeah.
But that makes it. You're just, if you're just trying to get a kill shot to show your buddies, by all means, run an auto. You know, it just comes down to what your final goal is. If you're just trying to get data to say, like, hey, you know, I hit that deer back, and that's really all you cared about, to see where you hit that deer so you can go recover it,
yeah.
And to show it to your family and friends, you know, get you a solid handy cam for whatever your budget can afford and have at it.
Well, you got to make sure. See, I actually bought some of the Sony handy cams, mm-hmm. or smaller ones. That were 4K, because mm-hmm. there's definitely times like when I'm self-filming, a lot of times I have to point it in a direction,
yeah.
And I'm giving it my best hope that it comes into the frame, and then I always have all, mine is set up with a crosshair,
mm-hmm.
and so I'm literally at full draw, and I'm like glancing, like that's why the screen's so important, so I'm like just looking at the screen, and I'm literally waiting for that buck or whatever I'm shooting to be like right in front of the crosshair. And then at that point I'm getting back to the target and like going through my shot and hoping they're not like still. And honestly, when people ask me about like moving shots, I don't prefer moving shots, but if you wanted to see it, mm-hmm. then it needed to be moving. Cause mm-hmm. if I had to let down and move that camera, and honestly, that buck that I shot this year, I moved that camera with my elbow mm-hmm. at full draw. Yeah, I was like boom, 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 like moving it around, and
you generally don't like to stop animals, do you?
Not really. Yeah. I mean, it depends on the distance.
Because I've never really like looking back at all the times that I've hunted with you. I can't remember you like back like trying to get something to stop. Like you let them stop on their own, or you'll even like you'll have to take a walking shot if you yeah. have to.
You want
to
know why?
That's tough
why?
To
yeah, why is that?
Too.
That's a good question.
Yeah. So.
Because I always stop them if I can.
I don't stop any.
Really?
Dude, in 19. Very rarely. 1999.
I've never had it backfire on me.
I was hunting in Illinois, and one of my dealers invited me hunting, so I went down there, and like this is back when I only have 5 days vacation for
mm-hmm.
the year.
Mm-hmm.
And so I was down there for 5 days in Illinois, and it was, you know, back when everyone wanted to hunt Pike County or whatever, and mm-hmm. I was like, someone had invited me, and once I got down there, it was like, you realize that, you know, he's like, dude, I got this farm and stuff. And then I got down there and realized, like, it's not big. And there was one picket row fence line, like, going through the middle of his field. And it was like, and I had to put a stand in it. And he's like, they cross through here, though, like, especially during the rut. But I'm, like, looking at a big, awesome hardwood piece of property that's the neighbor's. I can see rutting activity. And I had the same thing on the other side of this. And I'm literally like spending 5 full days in this fence line. And dude, a buck that I still think would be the biggest deer I've ever killed. I mean, like the cleanest 6x6 typical I've ever seen. And I'm talking like 14 inch backs to like 10 inch fronts. I mean, just a freaking perfect buck that I, you know, and at that time hadn't shot many deer, like any deer like that, but certainly not big deer. And that deer just came, like, he's like, I'm gonna go from this timber to that timber, and it was on my last day, and I'm like, oh my god, here it is, this sucker's coming right down. And he was totally chill, just like walking, and I just freaking monster bucks Matt. And dude, that thing hit a freaking new gear, and just like that, like that was it. I blew, like, he didn't, that sound startled him so bad that I was just like, well, I could have just shot him. You know, he's barely walking. I could have shot him like that. And I, once I tried to make a noise and it didn't work, I'm like, don't.
Never doing that.
Yeah, because if that possibility's there, I'm just like, nah.
Yeah.
But I'm also not going to take, like, a long walking shot. You know, I'm not going to do something like that. Yeah. I kind of, in my mind, I'm really playing out, like, how keyed up is the animal? If I first see the animal 200 yards in the timber and its ears are up and it's, like, looking around and it's scanning and it's looking, if that thing comes by you walking and you say so, it's already triggered. Like, you can see their demeanor is triggered. So, I don't know. I just, I always think of that one chance and I'm like, well, you know you can shoot them walking. Just do it. Yeah.
What's your and maybe it's not the
same
good.
Thing? Well, yeah. Like, my thing is, like, you know, we obviously get the opportunity to, like, see a lot of high-speed kills and, like, just how much those animals, like, react.
Dude,
and then, like, for me, like, I'm just, like, have I done it? Yeah. But, like, I'm just not going to put them on alert before I thwack them, you know what I mean?
Yeah, see, I've had the almost opposite effect happen. Like, I've tried to stop them, and they not stop. But I never go, blah. It's always like a,
yeah. Yeah.
And I'll get a little bit louder. I'm just, like, really quiet, just to, like, what was that? Type thing when they're walking is I'm not confident taking a walking shot. I want them standing still. I would rather take my chances on them trying to duck me than trying to shoot them walking.
Yeah, I like where your head's at because I'll shoot him when he runs over to me.
I just think people need to be like have a little bit more patience with it.
Yeah.
Like the majority of the time, like they're gonna stop at some point.
Dude, during the rut, the couple that I like the deer I shot in Iowa this year, like he came by me. Walking behind does, and I tried to get him to stop. Could not get that deer to stop. And I had to shoot him walking. He wasn't going to stop.
Yeah.
And then I hit him way back, and then 24 hours later, finally got it.
Yeah.
You know, so I don't know. It's a.
So what's the mistake you think?
I don't know about necessarily a mistake, but I think something that.
Or something that bugs you that people that are like self filming stuff do.
They don't, and this is going to sound bad, but we talk about this in our class, that you got to assume your viewer's stupid. And what I mean by that is you have to explain to them the who, what, when, where, whys, and weathers. You can't assume that they know you're in Georgia in the timber in November. You've got to tell them those things. You got to explain, you know, this has happened, that has happened. You just don't show up and say, hey, we're going to try and kill a big buck today.
Yeah.
No, it's like, if you're trying to tell a story, if you're trying to build momentum for something, you're trying to create some drama, like you've got to – I tell people, like, you have to talk to the camera every chance you get.
Yeah.
Assume your viewer's stupid. Assume they have no idea where you're at, what you're doing, or anything. You have to tell them. And even better than telling them is showing them. Like, if it's really cold, show me something that represents this cold. If it's really windy, show me something that represents this really windy.
Look at these nuts. How cold it is out here. Freezing my nuts off.
So I guess that's my – and it's not the best way of putting it. But,
no,
but
that's
generally,
a, no,
but
that's
generally
a good
your viewer
one.
Is stupid. You that's, have to tell them.
Mm-hmm. I mean, because unless you're willing to write that whole thing out on Instagram, which normally by the time people read the end, your thing's over, and then they got to do a watch it again. So, yeah, I mean, which I'm not too good at the what, whys, wins. So I'm good at the kill. I'm good at the kill shot. What do you think, Casey? That was a good one, Caleb. I like that.
For self-filming, I think it's for sure just don't be lazy. Like, if you have an
That's
idea
fair.
To film
yeah,
something,
yeah.
film something, they always try to just go, oh, I'll get it later,
yeah,
or
you're not gonna
I don't
want to
set up my camera and do this. It's just like, yeah, it's just like, just do it now, because I don't know how many times I've been editing and just been like, man, I need just like a couple more
oh,
clips.
Oh, dude.
Oh, that's
and it's
never
just like,
gonna
when
end.
You're short, like, you're never, you never have too much.
Yeah.
You can never have too much.
I put
so
together.
So it's just like, film everything. Film the squirrel climbing the tree next to you. Just
Doug's
like,
favorite.
I know you hate.
I mean, if there's
dude,
it's
like broad, sweet sunrise, Caleb.
Yeah.
I'm filming. He goes, "Where are we gonna use that?
You gotta have it, though."
Hey, everyone! Just so you know, the next hog hunt we've got has a really sweet barbed wire fence with the sun coming up behind it.
You know what? We'll use that for us. I'm not
Do
even
me a
get
favor.
That. Not
go
even
sit outside with a cup of coffee and see one of those for yourself. Yeah. Watch this buck go down.
Freaking. Yeah. This is what we have to deal with, people. This is how I have to deal with every time. This guy.
I feel for you, man.
Yeah, I know.
It's Any of you guys have anything time. You want to add? It's hunt time right now,
yeah,
dogs.
I think too, just like don't like, don't go out and spend a bunch of money on a camera if you're not willing to learn how to use it right.
Yeah, that's a
because
good one.
Like, we're running $10,000 rigs, you know, with everything on it, like Caleb and I and Casey, and it's like, if we didn't know how to run it, like, those would look terrible too.
Mm-hmm.
So 100%. It's like, yeah, like, you can't
you
just
give
go
me
out
that thing and you're really yeah. gonna see some dog dude.
You know, like, you got to know how to run it, so yeah. it does you no good to go out. And
yeah, the
like,
camera doesn't make the shooter. I mean, no. It's just like the bow doesn't make the archer. I mean, it's got everything yeah. to do with the guy running it.
The only time yeah. it matters is when you know how to use it.
Yeah,
then you can maximize it. You yeah, know?
Like I was saying earlier, like, just be creative, man.
Yeah, mm-hmm.
I'm gonna creative. Say one thing.
You don't need a $10,000 camera necessarily to be no. creative.
No, you're that's true. One of the best things I did, one thing I feel like I could recommend to people is when those new square roadie mics came out.
Yeah,
or I call them roadie, but
road. Go ahead.
I don't think anybody knows.
But those things, if you buy the adapter to go into the iPhone, to just clip one of those on your shirt and be able to, you know, if you're ever talking to the camera, just having one of those little lavs that even on your mm-hmm. iPhone, like even on your iPhone, all the stuff that I film when I'm like practicing out in the backyard and stuff, I always, you can, I mean, if you look in my like front quarter zip pocket, there's normally like one little square thing in there.
Yeah.
And that's just the audio. Cause if I don't use it, you know, it's just, you get so much ambient.
Mm-hmm. I thought you were about to talk trash about my mic cables. I thought you were
setting your
me
mic
up.
Cables are straight up dog shit. Like, dude. If like the fact that this thing started making a noise, I'm like, it was one of these headphones, Caleb's.
Yeah.
Like at the being in the
I'm
pocket.
Rough on equipment, man.
No, you're not,
dude. You
I
are
mean,
rough.
You don't take care of your stuff.
I got my mic in my pocket. It's been beating up against this the whole time we've been sitting here.
Dude, I've seen you slam some stuff in your truck, and I was like, don't drive my truck.
Yeah, look at my mic.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. That's why that thing shorts out every time you talk well, into it. Yeah, I'll for those you of you who make comments on YouTube, they're like, why is the audio bad? It's Caleb's mic.
No.
He didn't use mine. But no, they're, yeah. What are those called for those of you listening?
Wireless Go.
Yeah, just the wireless.
The wireless Go?
This yeah, is or the wireless
or Go. DJI makes the same kind.
Okay.
That's well,
does,
really
does
nice
DJI
one.
Make one that fits the USB-C? So
yeah,
plug
yeah,
it
yeah.
In.
Yep. Yep.
If you do that, it'll really, really...
And they're pretty cheap. I mean...
Yeah, the two things that I find that just distract people fast is movement and, like, bad audio.
Yeah.
Yes.
Those are I the two things. So if you can just try to – oh, you know what? Another one that someone told me long ago that really made a difference, and I didn't know this until I actually, like, started editing. If you always just count 3 seconds to yourself, like if you hit start, just, you know, just be like 1, 2, 3, then talk. And then when you, even if you screw up, if you know, if you're going to be done, just count to 3 before you hit record and then trim it. You know, even if you're putting something on Instagram, just go into Reels. When you go into the edit, just slide your track, you know, back. Yeah. But just having that extra 3 seconds mm-hmm. allows you to put another clip in front of it or behind it and put some type of a little transition, whether it's a flip or a cut or yeah. and you don't have to worry about your audio bleeding into the next clip that you put in. That was one of yeah. the things that was simple for me that I feel like just made my personal stuff's quality better, you know? So, all right. Casey, you got love anything? It. On
nope.
the way out?
No. I'm ready to go kill some pigs.
Oh, dude, I'm
Caleb.
Ready. I'm ready. I'm ready to see some stuff die.
All right, everybody. Thanks for listening. We'll see you later.
Be sure to check out knockonarchery.com for our full line of custom design products, as well as free in-depth education and bow hunting entertainment to help you shoot at your best.